Homer Hour on 94.5 ESPN.
Jason Wildy time on the Homer Hour. I'm Alex Strofe in for Homer, which means this segment ain't about me. I just shut up and listen to the brilliant football minds that are the former Packer Super Bowl champion Brian Bulaga and the three-time Wisconsin Sports Writer of the Year, Jason Wildy. Hello, Jason.
Good. I'm glad you're going to shut up because this would be the third time I've talked to you today now.
Yep, exactly. That's why I'm going to get the heck out of the way. Go ahead, Brian. All you. Hold on. We've got producer Will fixing it. All right, Brian, we got you now. Go ahead, Brian.
That works great. Perfect.
Jason, how are you doing? Good evening. How are you? Are you there?
Brian, it's a treat to talk to you again, and it's okay to talk to Strofe for the third time today. So I'm happy to be with both of you.
Good. Okay, so I heard your question in the presser today to the floor. I haven't watched the thing on Netflix yet. So what was this clip? What's the reference to that he said that Ted Thompson is responsible of drafting Jordan Love? What is that? What was said, or is this in what happened with that?
Yeah, kind of something to that effect. And I know that you from your time playing here, you know, you got to be good buddies with Jason Wallers, the PR director, or as you like to call him, Whalers.
Yep.
And so, you know, Tausch and I are doing the show this morning, and I got several texts and tweets and questions in the chat for YouTube about how Ted Thompson was influential in the drafting of Jordan Love. And I was like, wait, what? That doesn't make any sense. I think the direct quote from the film is, it was an opportunity that Ted Thompson thought was too good to pass up. And I texted Whalers and I'm like, hey man, look, you know, you and I both know what was going on at that point with Ted. And this doesn't track for me and I don't understand it. And so, you know, Wallers responded while we were doing the show and said, basically, look, I was in there for the interview. I don't think he ever said that in succession. And what Wallers' theory was that they took the editors that made the film, and I don't think they did it for any nefarious reason. I personally want to believe that it was people that don't know the lay of the land, right? Like if you're a documentarian, yeah, you're not fully plugged into what the Green Bay Packers in 2020 were all about. I mean, heck, you even aren't because you were gone. But what the working theory was that when they edited together this segment of the documentary, that they basically messed up and they took quotes from two different things that LaFleur had said and put them together, which, you know, certainly happens in the interest of time in a film. So basically, you know, it's not like he never even worked for Ted. Like, he was hired.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Right. So there's no connection there. And what I wanted to do, frankly, was because I didn't find this to be believable or important, but I felt, you know, sometimes I ask questions maybe to give people opportunities to clarify something that is out there. And that was kind of what my thought process was that if, you know, if LaFleur wanted to address it, this would give him the opportunity. And he did. And so, you know, now there's the, and look, I'm not an Aaron Rodgers conspiracy theorist, right? He's got some conspiracy theories, obviously. I don't subscribe to many of them. But now the conspiracy theory is, well, Rodgers hates Goody so much that he knew that they had edited this incorrectly and wanted to leave it in there so Goody wouldn't get credit for drafting Jordan Love.
Oh,
so, look,
the tinfoil hat is on. I like it.
Oh.
Yeah, so I'm not on board with that. But and look, I waited till the end of the press conference, frankly, because there's a hell of a lot more important stuff to worry about with this team and getting ready for a playoff run than what was said in Enigma. So I haven't watched it either. Strofe knows full well what I'm kind of grappling with when it comes to that. The bottom line is that, and it pains me to say this because I have an incredible affinity for Ted. I'm sure you do too, since he drafted you. But he was in some very difficult cognitive decline, and there's no way that he was integral in the selection of Jordan Love. That was Goody and LaFleur, and Ted had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, yeah. So away from documentaries and on to, football, you know, this week. How has LaFleur, or how did he, when you guys talked today, how has he kind of been keeping the team dialed in, going against, I mean, trying to be as nice as possible, a bad Saints team? How's he keeping them dialed in, locked in, you know, taking care of this week, not looking forward to next week going to Minnesota?
Yeah, really good question. And you obviously know this from playing. Like, some guys are pros and they're going to deliver the goods no matter what the circumstances. Other guys, they're going to look at this team and go, okay, these guys suck. I'm watching the film. I see the shortcut. Now, I would say this. I don't think any of the offensive linemen are looking at it that way, because the one strength of this team, this New Orleans team, is their defensive line. Like, they got some good players up there, right? So that, I don't think Josh Myers is kicking his feet up in the offensive line meeting room going, well, we don't have anything to worry about. These guys suck. But I think you're right about the mentality and the challenge that comes with that mentality, especially when you know what's on the other side on a short week on the road at Minnesota the following week. So, you know, I think they're accentuating kind of what the Saints do well. You know, we heard a lot about that defensive line. We've heard a lot about how that defense as a whole has been better, even though they fired a defensive-minded head coach who was in charge of the defense, which is strange. So, you know, I think the focus is not even necessarily on the Saints themselves so much as, hey, if you guys want to go into the playoffs on a four-game winning streak, if you guys want to have momentum going, then we got to take care of business against a team that's not as good as us. So let's not, as Homer might say, be fiddling and diddling. Let's take care of business here. And I think that's probably the messaging. Look, he made them practice outside today. I mean, it's snowing pretty good. I know you miss living in the Midwest, Brian, being a Midwestern guy who grew up in the Chicago area, went to college in Iowa, and played here. I'm driving home, and it is treacherous and not enjoyable. And I know you missed that in Florida. But you get the hurricane issues, so it's, you know, tomato. But those guys practiced in a snowstorm. Like, it was coming down pretty good. And so, you know, one of his messages was, look, we could have this kind of weather on Monday night, so you need to be ready for it. And obviously the Saints will most definitely not be ready for it. So we're going to stay out here and work. I don't know if he'll do that again tomorrow. I don't know what their plan is, but they're definitely making sure that no one takes this game lightly, because to get to where they want to go, they got to get this done. And I think it helps, Brian, even though we all kind of assume they're going to make the playoffs, and rightfully so, I think it does help that they can sell the, you guys win and you're in. And I do think that they're lucky in that way, that they haven't already been like punched their ticket to the playoffs, and that they're actually able to say, hey, we need to win this to get in the playoffs. Then we can worry about everything else.
Yeah. How does what's the update on Quay? Is he probably down this week, or what have you heard on that?
Yeah, he's not going to play. Like, you know, when LaFleur says week to week, that's his way of saying it won't be this week. And so, you know, one of the topics with him this afternoon was about, obviously, how good – Edgerrin Cooper has been, and what that might mean, you know, and he made it very clear, it's not plug and play where they can just put Edgerrin Cooper in at the Mike linebacker and have him play Quay's snaps. It's just not, he's not ready for that. And I thought LaFleur did a really good job of kind of explaining how, while he's been very good and they really like what they're getting from him, he ain't ready to be interchangeable with all the different linebacker spots. And I thought that was an important distinction because there's a little bit of Edgerrin mania, right? Because he's won the Defensive Player of the Week twice. He's played really well. So I do think that, you know, it's probably going to be Eric Wilson or, you know, maybe Isaiah McDuffie. Both of them are capable to be the mic and to have the headset. But do I think that Edgerrin Cooper will play more snaps than he did last week? I do. But you can tell, and you know this from having played in the league both as a young player and as a grizzled old veteran, young guys screw up. And as good as he's been, they know he's also going to screw up if they give him too much on his plate. So they don't want to do that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, listen, and, you know, he's been hurt too. He's coming back. So, like, listen, if you take him from 30-whatever snaps to 70 snaps in a game, it's not really the best practice, right? Like, it's just not the best thing to do. But they'll be smart with that. What do you – I guess maybe you haven't heard anything, and maybe I shouldn't even be asking, but what do we know about Jair? Is he out this week too, or what?
Flip a coin.
So I talked to Jair today.
Okay.
Once I tell you what we talked about, you'll know that I don't have anything informational to share. I have my Oregon sweatshirt on today that has a quote from Dan Lanning when he was being rumored to be the next Alabama coach, where he says, you know, they're talking about the grass being greener, and he says the grass is pretty damn green in Eugene. And so Jair is coming by, and he sees my sweatshirt, and he stops to talk to me. I like that sweatshirt. Grass is pretty damn green, huh? I said, yeah, it is. Hey, how are you feeling? I'm good. Okay. And then he says something else about, do I think Oregon's going to win it? So I appreciate him being friendly. And I said, I don't really care. I just want the games to be good. But then off he went. Like, he's a different cat, man. Like, it's not like he's unfriendly. It's not like he's, you know, not conversational. But he knows we're all in there every day. He knows, kind of like Santa, he knows when you're awake. He knows if you've been bad or good. He knows we want to know what his status is. And yet he does not make himself available for any of those meaningful type conversations. So I don't know if there'll be snow or if he'll play on Monday night, but look, at some point, and they're really excited about what Carrington Valentine did in the game. If I were to have to predict, if Jair comes back, I think Carrington Valentine will play more than Eric Stokes. But if Jair does not come back, and I don't think Fuller didn't practice today either, so I'm guessing that he's probably another week away, at least with his ankle. So that means you got to play Nixon inside. And then, you know, if you have Ja, then you don't have to play both Stokes and Valentine. If you want to just play Valentine, you can. And he's coming off a game where he played pretty well. So it is important to figure out what the heck this guy's going to do. Because let's not forget, when he is on the field, he is an elite corner. It's just the last 2+ years, it just has not been consistent that he's been on the field.
Yeah. What, also, it's funny. I mean, and maybe it's just me watching the TV copy, and it was the same way when Dobbs came back and he scored his touchdowns, and it was the same way he scores touchdowns, and there's like it doesn't seem excited about it. Like, he just doesn't seem happy. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he scored the 2 touchdowns, he's sitting on the bench, and he's just kind of just hanging out there. Like, I don't even think he smiled. Did he crack a smile in the locker room this week? Did he crack one in the locker room after the game? I mean, no, nothing.
Yeah, I don't think so. I wasn't in Seattle, but from what I gathered from Domofsky and Wes and those guys, I don't think he's – look, he – you know, Tausch likes to tease me because last year I had – or 2 years ago, I had said he's the most even-keeled guy that I'd covered. And what I should have said because he gives me grief about it now ever since, because even keeled guys don't just not show up for work. But more of the flat – he's just such a flat line guy, right? Like, occasionally he does smile, but, like, he's and look, the problem with trying to describe him is there are certain words that you would use that would be viewed as negative and have a bad connotation. So I don't want to be – you know, I think he's a hard guy to get to know, and he definitely doesn't have a whole lot of interest in us getting to know him. But your observation, like, if you watch the video of LaFleur tossing out the game balls to him and Edger and Cooper, like, Romeo catches his and just sort of shrugs. Edger and Cooper gets his, and there's McKinney and Nixon and other guys hugging him and getting all rowdy. Like, he's just different. Romeo is just different, and maybe that's a little bit of a euphemism for weird, and I don't want to say that about him because that, like I said, it has a bad connotation to it. But he's just, I don't know him. Like, and you know this, like, you guys only let us know as much as you want us to know. And in some cases, like our relationship, which has grown since we've been doing stuff together on the radio, but like you could have been the worst guy in the locker room, but you could have put up a great front to convince me you were a great guy, right?
Yeah.
So I'm always leery. I'm always leery to make judgments on guys or because guys completely change after you're done covering them or while you're covering them. Not that I'm referring to anyone in particular that has a documentary about themselves right now. So in Romeo's case, I don't want to pretend that I understand him, but there is not the one thing I will say is that he does not show outward signs of joy like most players who play football. And that is the one thing you always hear the coaches and Goody talk about, you know, we want guys that love football. He may very well love football, and I don't know him well enough to know either way, but he certainly does not portray joy when things happen in a very positive way. I kind of joke about this with Sydney's volleyball team. If you watch volleyball, after every point, if you didn't see what actually happened on the point, you don't know who won the point and who lost it because they always come together and high-five each other after every point no matter what, right? And with Rome, you don't know – if he made an awesome play or if he just lost the game by dropping the ball and it getting intercepted. Like, that's just the reality with him. There is no difference in his affect regardless of what happened. And that, to me, is different because I don't know anybody who's quite like that. Like, even Eddie Lacy was – you could see joy on occasion from him. And I just never see, I've never really seen it from Romeo.
The volleyball analogy was very well done. Jason Wilde, three-time Wisconsin Sports Writer of the Year, co-host Wilde and Tausch, weekdays 9 to noon here on ESPN Wisconsin. Thanks, Jason.
Yeah, I got to go shovel, guys. Take care. Be good.
Yeah, good luck. Yeah, Brian.